ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Welcome to Medialand, your weekly look at what's happening behind the scenes and on your screens. I'm Tim Burrows.
And I'm Zoe Samios, filling in for Vivian Kelly.
This week, the commercial broadcasters ask the government for a sweeter deal.
And is Netflix just an old school movie studio now? And what exactly is a K-pop demon hunter?
But first, is Australia's biggest radio company about to change hands? The owner of two of our biggest radio networks seems to be for sale, Zoe.
Yeah, there's been a reporting buzz going around the future of Listener and Triple M owner Southern Cross Stereo and if it might be potentially sold to Nine.
And we should mention that Zoe's day job is at the Australian Financial Review, which is owned by Nine. We're in reporting season, Zoe. This is where we find out all of this stuff. So this week we saw results coming in from Nine, results coming in from Southern Cross Stereo, results coming in from ARN Media, another of the big audio companies. But I guess the one that really got the conversation happening this week was speculation that maybe Nine would want to potentially even give up its talk stations, which include 2GB and 3AW, and instead buy Southern Cross Stereo. They're the people who own, as you were saying, Triple M, but also the Hit Network. So that owns big stations like Today in Sydney or The Fox in Melbourne.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a really interesting bit of speculation, to be honest, because, well, for a few different reasons, it's not a secret that everyone has been talking about Nine selling its radio stations. They kind of siloed out that division and it's operating, kind of running its own race separate to the other divisions of Nine, including publishing where I work. What's interesting about it is you're switching out radio for radio, right? So why would you do that?
Well, I think I might have a theory, which my theory is money. So one of the things we found out this week was that Nine Radio, as it operates at the moment, those talk stations, in the last financial year, its profit was $9 million, which obviously to URI, $9 million might feel like a lot, but to a big media company, that's very, very little. Whereas at the same time, Southern Cross or Stereo, they reported their results and they're about 10 times that amount. So you can see why they might be more attracted to a radio network, which is worth more. And of course, the reason that that's more attractive is because it's attractive to advertisers, because everyone wants to talk to 25 to 54 year olds, and that's FM, that's not AM talkback.
Exactly. And I think you touched on an interesting point there. One of the big things Nine has done since it merged with Fairfax Media back in 2018 is look at ways to maximize reach for advertisers. So it wants complementary products, ideally. So, you know, say you air maths, you hopefully want someone on one of the other platforms to be interested in maths. And the reality is 2GB is probably not going to be that.
So you're saying we might get married at first sight on the radio?
No, not married at first sight on the radio, but you can imagine for an advertiser knowing that the person watching maths probably listens to Today FM is really appealing. And so for the right price, and it's always about price, right? You can see that switch happening. Now, that being said, I know that I saw in the reports this week, Nine CEO Matt Stanton was saying, we're not really looking at SCA and all of that, but you know, everyone's going to speculate. I expect consolidation is something that will happen at a point.
Look, the other thing about that speculation as well was Southern Cross Stereo, when they did their results announcement, they absolutely didn't throw cold water on it. What they had to say was, yes, we think there needs to be consolidation.
Yes, but the thing I find interesting about when someone says, hey, we're for sale, is they usually don't have many buyers. If you feel the need to tell everyone, hey, come look at our books now, we're ready for you, it usually means probably the price has been too high and people have walked away or they've taken a look already. I don't think it's the wrong thing for them to do, by the way. I think it's good to go out there. You never know who might be interested in taking a look under the hood. But I do think usually when a company says, hey, please buy us, it's usually a sign of desperation more than expansive interest. Tim, what links a K-pop demon hunter and a Thursday murder club?
Well, aside from being both rather excellent band titles. They're also two Netflix movies which have kind of had a run out in the wild over the last week or two in actual cinemas around the world, Zoe.
Yes, that's right, Tim. Here's a taste of Netflix's most watched movie ever.
It's time. The world will know you as pop stars. But you will be much more than that. You will be hunters.
Hey, this is the men's bathhouse. Get out of here.
They're stealing the souls of our fans? Let's send those disgusting demons back to the depths where they belong.
So that was K-pop Demon Hunters. Now, I must admit, I've rarely felt as disconnected from the culture as I do right now, as people get excited about things like Taylor Swift engagements and K-pop Demon Hunters. But yeah, what was different was it was a hit on Netflix, but it also had an opportunity to be viewed at actual cinemas. So limited release in Australia, so just 49 Hoyts screens here in Australia, but 1,700 in the US, and it was popular. And similarly, at the same time in the UK, Thursday Murder Club, which is a sort of cozy book about, you know, old folk solving murders. The book written by Richard Osman, very, very popular around the world. Again, that made it into British cinemas.
I just saw your movie preference right before my eyes just then. I know which one you'd rather watch.
Honestly, I'm not sure you would get me out to the cinema for either of those, but we'll save that one for a little later in today's conversations. But I guess what interests me is what it says about the strategy of Netflix by actually allowing some of their content to go to actual cinemas in the first place.
Oh, I love it. It's great marketing, right? You can go big. It's kind of interesting, right? Because you have these streaming services that obviously have, or probably billions internationally, viewers of a lot of different things and all this content. But they're kind of going, how can we get people for something specific that we know might really work? And that's where the cinema plays a part. But I also read somewhere, and this is interesting and a little bit cheeky, that to get nominated for awards, like Academy Awards, you need to meet a certain threshold in cinemas. And so this is kind of a nice way for streaming services to be able to enter those awards, which I think is kind of genius if you can nail it and it's actually worth the money. But it's an interesting point as well.
And I guess that's the one thing we do know about the movie world. Everyone has egos and everyone likes to win awards.
Exactly.
You're listening to Medialand on ABC Radio National. I'm Tim Burrows.
And I'm Zoe Samios, filling in for Vivian Kelly.
They're off to see The Wizard. The Wonderful Wizard of Canberra.
Yes, the commercial television broadcasters are heading to the capital next week to lobby the Return government about the future of free-to-air broadcast in Australia. A Current Affair host, Ali Langdon, is excited.
It's less than a week until free TV networks come to Canberra for our Shaping a Nation showcase. I'll be there with Shervo and Julia Morris, along with a whole bunch of our TV friends, Tuesday, 2nd of September. Can't wait to see you.
Bridget Fair is the CEO of lobby group Free TV Australia, and she's with us now. Hi, Bridget.
Hi, Tim. Great to be here.
Now, if I had to describe your job, Bridget, I'd say there's an underlying tension between representing what the owners of the TV networks want and what's in the best interests of the viewers. Is that a fair summary of where the tension sits?
I don't ever feel that in my job, because I think there's a huge alignment between what commercial television delivers and what is in the public interest. And we've been spending a lot of time thinking recently, for instance, in the UK, they're having a big study about the future of public service broadcasting, and licences like the ones my members hold in the UK are called public service broadcasting licences. And that's because they recognise what they deliver to the Australian public as well as being commercial businesses. So I think for me, it's always about that. And that's where we have the strongest voice, where we're working in the public interest.
But I suppose one difference is they do work for the shareholders first.
They do, but my job is to find the areas that we can align on, and when I'm talking to government, they're going to be interested in what's in the best interests of Australians. So that's where we've got to find that sweet spot.
Bridget, you run Free TV. What is Free TV? How would you define it?
Well, we're a peak body member group, and we do things like bringing our members together to find areas of common interest. We engage with stakeholders, including political stakeholders, and we try to communicate the value of commercial television to those stakeholders and to the public.
So that would include Channel 9, for instance, Channel 7. Does it include things like 10Play or 7Plus?
Yes. So all of the free television services that my members operate. So it's 7, 9, 10, WIN and Impasia.
Now you are, as we were saying, off to Canberra next week. You're putting on an event called Shaping a Nation. What is it and what's the purpose of the event?
Well, this is something that we do from time to time down in Canberra, where we want to make sure that people understand the value of the platform that we represent. So we'll be down there talking to the new government, and we have a new minister, so it's very important that we commence our engagement with the government. And we want to emphasise the strength of the industry and all the things that we know that Australians love about us. So we know that almost 20 million Australians tune in to free-to-air television every week. We know that there's 25,000 hours plus of Australian content being delivered every year, and a whole lot of other things. But sometimes people aren't aware of those things because they think of us as a business as opposed to what we deliver to the fabric of the society that we live in.
And this new minister is Annika Wells.
Yes.
You said before that you're representing the common interests of all of your stakeholders. So what exactly are you asking the government for, or what are you lobbying the government for at the moment?
So we want to make sure that we're not shackled by outdated regulations. We've still got a lot of regulations that are hangovers from sometimes the 80s or even earlier. And we want to be in the best position to be able to compete. So we are commercial businesses, but we do need the right regulatory settings because we're very heavily leveraged to the regulations that affect us.
Can you give some examples?
So probably number one on our list would be the commercial broadcast tax. It's a bit of an overhang from a super profits tax that was imposed on the industry in 1964. It was converted to something called a kind of a transmitter tax in 2017. But obviously we're not an industry that's making super profits anymore.
So can you explain how it works?
Well, the way it used to be a percentage of revenue. Now the way it works is that in 2017, the government said they wanted to charge us about $40 million, which was about one third of what we previously paid because the licence fee was being adjusted. And it's nominally levied against the transmitters that you use to deliver your service. But the design of it is quite difficult to explain. And in fact, in regional areas, it ended up that when that tax was converted to a transmitter tax, regional broadcasters ended up paying more than they used to pay. So they now also get a rebate to bring them back to where they used to be, but the tax keeps growing. Now, we're competing with other platforms, for instance, you know, global streamers or so forth, who come in and offer their services on a fully taxpayer-funded NBN. And we are spending $1.6 billion plus on Australian content every year, which dwarfs any other platform. We are putting out 25,000 hours of Australian content. We're investing $400 million in news. We're putting out 390 bulletins a week. And we are also paying the government to use transmitters, which we also have to pay, and then we have to duplicate our transmission infrastructure because we're putting it out online as well.
So but you're paying to use the public airwaves, though, aren't you? There's a value to them.
Well, I think you have to look at the
means by which your members make money.
Maybe there is a value, but you have to look at the total value. So you need to look at what are the things that we are doing that we're regulated to do. So the amount of Australian content we're spending, the captionings obligations that we have, the other regulatory obligations that we have. And that should be considered when we look at what is the value of the licence that these people hold.
You mentioned the international streaming companies that are obviously making content and operating on the NBN. Is that the reason why these commercial broadcasters don't want to pay the taxes anymore, or is it more complicated than that? You know, we know that the television market is challenged. Is it a bit to do with that as well?
Well, we've obviously got more competition than ever before, and all my members want to do is to be able to take every dollar and put it to its best possible use so that we can compete more effectively and keep delivering people the Australian content that they love, the live and free sport, the trusted news, entertainment, drama, all of those things which they get for free to every home in the country. So we don't want to have to take money and put it into a tax situation where we're already paying other taxes which our competitors aren't paying, and we want to be able to use that to make the best possible content.
But could you guarantee that's what would happen, that it wouldn't just go to improving the profits of these companies, given that they are commercial? We had Chris Jans, who previously had worked for Nine, one of your members, and he talked about how all of the money from the news media bargaining code negotiations ended up improving profits, not in more journalists. What would be different this time?
I haven't noticed that television broadcasters' profits are going up and up and up. So I think what we need to look at is something a little bit more sophisticated than whether the news media bargaining code money should have been hypothecated into, let's spend it all on journalism. What we need is functioning commercial entities, and they've got to put that money in to make the business run so that they can keep doing what they're doing, which is, as I just said, you know, 390 news bulletins a week. That doesn't even include updates and community service announcements and current affairs programs and investigative journalism and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, the fact that money doesn't just, you know, go straight to a particular purpose doesn't mean that it's not supporting a very important public benefit in terms of journalism.
Something that you successfully lobbied for historically was the removal of the content quotas for Australian children's content. A lot of that has left commercial television now. The ABC is obviously a place where you can still get a lot of it. Do you have any regrets about that lobbying? Do you think that was the right thing to do for the viewers?
I don't have any regrets about that lobbying, because when we took that argument to Canberra, we were required to be broadcasting 390 hours of children's programming every year, and most of that programming was being watched by less than 1,000 children. So if we're talking about something that's supposed to be having a cultural impact, it's not having a cultural impact if nobody's watching it. We already know that kids have moved in their viewing choices, and what we want to do is have strong commercial networks where we can put our money into the Australian content that people are going to watch.
How do you get people to form habits of viewing television at a young age, though, if you're not giving them children's programming?
Well, they're watching other types of programming. They're watching Lego Masters. They're watching The Voice. They're coming to us for sport. They're watching other things on commercial television and doing it in a family environment where we're watching all together, which is really important.
I want to talk about gambling advertising for a second. And gambling is what I get to do in my day to day, so I'm super interested in it.
Probably we should mention writing about, not just literally doing.
Yes, not literally gambling day to day. Writing about gambling is my day to day. Is the writing on the wall for gambling advertising on television?
Well, I think we've been in a very long conversation about this issue, and I think it's clear that there is going to be some significant changes in the amount of advertising that's going to be permitted on TV. Interestingly, we've already seen a huge drop in the amount of advertising just as a result of the conversation. So I think we accept there's a mood for community change. I think, you know, some people feel that mood is for a total ban. We don't necessarily agree with that position, but we understand there's going to be restrictions. And the conversation we're having with government is, one, we need some certainty, and two, because that will have a big revenue impact on my members, there needs to be a conversation around how do we mitigate that impact.
Is there a way to mitigate that impact? Like, what, if there's no gambling advertising on television, that we can talk about how much it actually contributes to these media companies, but the reality is it's still a lot. How do you actually, you know, make up the absence of that money that's coming into these businesses?
Well, we would start with getting rid of the commercial broadcasting tax. It's currently suspended for 1 year, but we'd like to see that not coming back. It's worth about $50 million a year. So you're right, it's not nearly as much as the impact of these things is going to be on the industry, but it would help not to have the government with their hands in our pockets. Other things that we're looking at are, you know, some direct support for regional TV, which is obviously challenged at the moment. We've got and maybe looking at something like extending the producer offset, which we currently use for drama and documentaries, to something like news production.
Can you explain what you mean by the producer offset?
So we currently have a mechanism in place called the producer offset, and that's where we incentivise people to make Australian content in drama and in documentaries. And we do that by the government giving them a rebate on some of the expenditure that they commit on those programs. And we are looking at whether there may be a similar mechanism for news, which is another very valuable type of content that we think should be incentivised.
This is Medialand on ABC Radio National. Our guest is Bridget Fair from Free TV Australia. And just to follow up on Zoe's point on the gambling advertising, one of the arguments which has been made quite strongly is that it's a serious source of revenue for media companies. And without it, that would leave a hole. Is it not true, though, that when these same companies are bidding for sports rights, they're making the bidding knowing that there'll be advertising revenue from betting? And if they know in the future that revenue isn't coming, they'll bid less, so the market will correct itself.
Possibly, but I mean, a lot of those deals are very long term, so they've been entered into on the basis of what that revenue projection was at the time.
So would it be better to change the law now before the NRL deal gets done?
Well, I think everybody would like to know what it is that we're dealing with so that we can all just move forward on a solid footing, because at the moment what we're seeing is, having started the conversation 2 or 3 years ago, there's just been a big drop in the whole category anyway, so because people are sort of trying to look like they're being responsible before they get regulated to do even less. So it will have an impact on the value of sports rights, and that's why we need to make sure that we set the businesses up to be as sustainable as possible, because live and free sport is one of the pillars of our industry and one of the things that we deliver to the Australian public that keeps us all connected. We've got a very fragmented world at the moment. We're seeing stories like the ones out of Victoria this week that indicate fragmentation in our society is worse than it's ever been. And we are one of the services where people enjoy the same thing at the same time, and that makes us feel that we're part of a community.
Bridget, when you're talking to the government about something like gambling advertising, is part of the conversation saying, hey, we're not the only people that have gambling ads, you take them off ours, it can go on YouTube where there's plenty of kids as well, you know, TikTok, Instagram, there's lots of different ads. Is it a conversation that you have around, well, everyone should be regulated, or is the aim to just not over-regulate the things that they currently do?
I think it's both of those things. We obviously want to make sure that we're not over-regulated, and we also want to make sure that we don't see revenue bypass just going to other platforms that are competing with us and who are placed in a more advantageous position. And if we're looking at where kids are and how they're affected, then we should be trying to regulate those platforms.
Another regulatory question. Media ownership, how do you want to see those rules evolve?
I don't think we've got a firm position on that as an industry. I'm sure individual members have particular views, but it's absolutely the case that those rules do need to be reviewed and looked at. They've been in place for a long time, and they are restraints on commercial activity and mergers and acquisitions that don't apply to any of the people that we compete with. So things like expecting that there will always forevermore be, you know, 3 licenses per market, or that they all have to be owned separately rather than being operated together, and having the voices test, which is very complicated, are real handbrakes on being able to have deals that provide scale in the industry.
So to clarify, what you mean is potentially we might see a time when 7, 9 and 10 aren't all legally having to be owned by different people?
Well, at the moment, that's not a possibility, because there's only a 1 license to a market rule for television. But these are restrictions that don't apply to any other platform. So I don't know what people may or may not want to do in the future, but it's unclear to me why we need those restrictions.
Bridget Fair, thank you very much for joining us on Medialand.
Thank you very much for the time.
Okay, Zoe, how has the culture been treating you this week?
Feel like we're exposing how different we are, Tim. This was a great week in pop culture. My Wednesday was ridiculous. It started with a text message at 6:40 a.m. telling me to wake up because my close personal friend Taylor Swift was engaged, which was awesome. We love that. But it was also the day of the week that I love most at the moment because it's the day that The Summer I Turn Pretty releases new episodes on Amazon Prime.
The Summer I Turn Pretty, I feel distant from from the culture, so you'll have to tell me everything about that.
The Summer I Turn Pretty is based on a book and it's basically a teen love story. There's a girl, she grew up with two boys. They used to holiday at a place called Cousins Beach. And as she grows up, she realizes she's in love with one of them and then the other, and they're both in love with her. And this season, she's supposed to marry one of them. And it has been so dramatic.
And this is a documentary?
Yes, it's a documentary. It's a real life story. The funny thing about it is, and apologies for anyone who hasn't watched the whole series, but it is a book, so you should know the plot, I would
hope. Maybe no major spoilers, though.
No major spoilers, but the one thing is, they're getting married, right? But they're 21 years old. So this whole plot is centered around a 21-year-old wedding, and it's filled with all of the drama that would come with 21-year-olds getting married and all of the hormones that are still probably moving around their bodies. What are you watching, Tim?
I guess I've probably had a culturally slightly different experience in recent days. I didn't see Demon Hunters, but I did indulge in some supernatural horror over the weekend. There's a movie which sort of, it felt to me like it came from nowhere, but has become very popular, called Weapons. So the same director, writer, producer as Zach Cregger. It's a really well-told mystery slash horror, multiple viewpoints, some really flawed characters. You know, there's they're a little bit more kind of three-dimensional than most, and quite scary, but also much smarter than you would expect from a typical sort of horror popcorn movie. So I was glad I actually saw it at the cinema, because there is something different about seeing these things at the cinema. But yeah, Weapons, I'm going to recommend it.
Did you actually watch it at the cinema, or did you cover your eyes for bits of it?
Do you know what? There were probably a couple of moments of... They're not too bad on the jump scares. I do have a problem with jump scares.
Me too.
Remember to follow Medialand on the ABC Listener app.
And do you still watch free-to-air television, like on an actual television? We would love to hear from you. Email us at medialand@abc.net.au.
Thank you to our producer, Rob Kelly. We'll catch you the same time next week in your feeds and on ABC Radio National. A big thank you to Zoe Samuels for the last fortnight. Vivian Kelly will be back from her demon hunting expedition next week.
Oh, thanks for having me, Tim. I'm a bit sad that it's all over.
Well, hopefully we'll do it again. Toodlepip, Zoe.
See you, Tim.
Listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.